You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to Here District. I am the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, here on this fantastic voyage. My first mate, Chris Johnson. What's happening, man? How you living? Everything good?
Going good. What's happening?
Long time no see. I say that facetiously because we were hanging at the beach this morning as you guys were putting my daughter Shiloh, your sister, through a rigorous workout down at the lagoon in Playa del Rey. So that was cool. So listen, man, talk about a fantastic voyage, Chris. You know, a month ago, if you would have told me that the roster construction of this team would look like it looks right now, I would have said, man, that's unbelievable. But it started out, Chris, when John Horse, the horse trader, decided to stretch Dame Lillard, stretch that contract. Achilles, probably not going to be available until maybe March at the earliest, April, maybe not at all next year. But that was a key move. But then Dame, and so we all talked about it, that Dame gets his money, gets all of his money. And then I just found out he actually gets the 54 plus whatever. It's not like they're stretching Dame. They're just stretching.
Yeah, we were trying to clarify that with Jim O. And I think he gets his 54, but then on the salary cap tip is 22 on the head.
Yeah. It's a salary cap he's getting, move. But he gets his 54 plus.
20 or whatever he's getting. Or 16, whatever. He's getting like 7.
14 is mid-level exception. 14. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing we want to touch on just briefly, but I'm so glad that Dame, the smart money was saying that he'd wait, rehab, get paid, and then kind of pick and choose toward next season at some point exactly where he thought he'd be a good fit to chase a ring. He's like, nah, I'm not doing that. Portland is my home. I love Portland. I spent the bulk of my career in Portland. What was it, 11, 12 years or whatever it was in Portland. Family's still there in Portland, man. He goes back to the funky PO. And, I'm just so happy that, he seems to be at peace with his decision, man.
Some guys are easy to root for. Dame's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Just a really solid human being. The kind of guy that, when he leaves your team, you hope that he goes somewhere where he's loved, where they treat him right, and where he can finish his career in a way that he deserves. And I think this is the perfect opportunity. I love what he posted on Instagram. Dylan shared it to our group chat. Sometimes what didn't work out for you really worked out for you. I mean, that is like, I love that line. And it worked out for Dame. Now, did it work out for the Bucks? Yeah, no, it worked out for the Bucks. Not only Miles...
You sound like one of these national media guys.
No, please don't say no. Seriously, dude, I'm being serious. Don't do that to me.
ESPN?
I'm not a hater like that. But what I do like about the roster construction of the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. We got 12 guys that are 26 or under on the roster. Including two ways. Twelve guys that are, either 26 or under 26? Holy crap.
Well, you got Giannis, Bobby, and Torian. Torian at 31. Other than that, I'm trying to think who's older than 26. Who's anybody in between that gap?
How old is Kuz?
But Kuz is like 28, 29. Kuz is including
two ways. So it's something sick. But Dad, we were talking about it on the ride over to the beach to work Shiloh out. Look, this roster now reflects the modern NBA, what you need to compete, what you need to keep up with the Joneses, if you will. Young legs that can run, defend. And you got to be able to do it in waves for 48 minutes if you're trying to compete for an NBA championship.
Right after this, we're going to bring on ESPN sideline reporter extraordinaire, sometimes host of NBA Today, George Sedano. All right, we want to welcome to Here District, George Sedano. George Sedano is an NBA sideline reporter at ESPN. George Sedano hosts a radio show daily. Also, George Sedano is on NBA Today, sometimes hosting, sometimes on the panel. Does a little bit of everything. George, welcome to here, District, man.
Thank you guys appreciate for you having me. Here. I appreciate it so much.
Let's jump right into it, man. Is there a better front line, George, in the NBA right now than Giannis and Miles Turner? You got Durant, you got Sengun, you got Jokic and Gordon, you got Mobley and Allen, you got Cat and OG Anunoby, Rudy and Julius, you got Anthony Davis, Derek Lively, that made its way onto the list. Derek Lively, good, but not great. But your thoughts on this tandem of Giannis and Miles Turner, where does it rank in terms of two-man front lines in the NBA right now?
It's certainly up there. I don't think there's any question about it. And you talk about the way that I think that they can mesh together, similarly to the way Brooke played. You know, Miles likes to play outside a lot more, but the difference is Miles, you know, I'm not trying to knock Brooke because Brooke is awesome and Brooke is great, but he's not as athletic as Miles is. I don't think he was ever as athletic as Miles is even now. So I think that brings a different element to it as well. You know, Miles is an incredible shot blocker, as Brooke was in his time in Milwaukee. But just that level of athleticism, the ability to cover ground, it's going to be really hard to score on Milwaukee because those guys can just cover so much space.
I mean, of the guys that I mentioned, George, who would you say would give our duo some competition for top tandem in the league right now, top front court tandem between, you know, Durant and Sengun? That you know, anytime you got Kevin Durant, I mean, Mobley, Jared Allen, I like. I don't know, man. It just doesn't look like Jokic because of the sheer greatness of what he brings to the table, and Aaron Gordon. But who would you think would be the biggest competition for Giannis and Miles?
So I think for different reasons, I look at Jokic and Gordon. First of all, they've won a championship together, right? So I think that is the biggest reason I would go with those guys. Aaron Gordon plays such a huge part in that. He's basically what I would say a superstar in his role. He may not be a superstar. He may not be an all-star, but he is absolutely an elite level role player who, you know, it almost feels like when you call him an elite level role player, that's a knock on him. It's not.
Well, I think Miles Turner, I love that term, George. You say a superstar in his role. I think Miles has been quiet as kept, a superstar in his role. I think he's led the league in total blocks over the last 5 or 6 years. Every year he's up there in terms of contest, which Brooke did so well. Brooke, people don't realize Brooke's, his contested shots, 2-point shots, was sometimes 300, 400, 500 more than the next guy. So I think Miles could do that. But you mentioned Jokic. Giannis, multiple-time MVP. Jokic, multiple-time MVP. You got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the reigning MVP. With the addition, not only of Miles Turner, George, but also the shooting that they brought back. Gary Trent Jr., AJ, all these guys coming back. Bobby Portis coming back. But the additions that we've made with Cole Anthony and some of these other players, if things fall into place, does Giannis have a legitimate chance to break through for another MVP?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, scored 30 points per game last year on 60% shooting. So if he replicates that, he's going to be in the mix. He finished third. I had him third on my ballot last year. I had Shai, Jokic, and Giannis in my top three. So as long as he's capable of doing that stuff.
What does he got to do to break through that? I mean, and that's my question is like, He's kind of set, you know, settled into third.
MJ, to me, it's about the team results. I don't think there's any doubt. Like, the East is so weird right now and so wide open that you could kind of talk me into, you know, a number of different teams being one of the top six playoff teams. I think Milwaukee is in that mix. And, you know, can Kyle Kuzma, you know, who was at one point a guy who could star in his role with the Los Angeles Lakers, can he go back to being that kind of guy? Because it felt like there were a lot of bad habits he picked up in Washington, and it didn't translate to winning with Milwaukee.
I think Kuz has gotten himself back on the page he needs to be on to play championship basketball, and that starts with conditioning and kind of getting after the work a little earlier in the summer than he has in years past. John Horst said that more minutes for Kuz at the four, or they're, you know, they like him at the four. I think that's going to do wonders for him. I don't think one of the biggest problems for Kuz last year that he wasn't in shape to really take on those first assignments on the defensive end. Now, when we look at all the other front courts, this is the top front court by production. Obviously, what Giannis did last year and Turner did last year. It's one of the top front courts and rim protection. Why wouldn't, like, why did the narrative about how good Miles Turner was in Indiana change once he got traded to, once he signed with the Bucks?
I don't think it's changed for me personally. I can't speak for other people, but what I would say is, again, to me, the Bucks, I know what Giannis is bringing to the table if he's healthy. I know what Miles Turner is bringing to the table if he's healthy. To me, the question, and look, you mentioned, you guys mentioned that they've got some pretty good shooting on the roster there with Gary, Trent, and AJ. So I like the bones of the roster in some places. I just think they have weaknesses. And to me, point guard is a big one. And what Kuz can bring to the table, to your point. When he was with the Lakers and, you know, won a championship and played on that roster even beyond that, he played the four. And he took on, at times, some of the tougher covers defensively. So I do think, to me, that's it. I don't see any issue with Turner and Giannis. I feel like they should fit fairly seamlessly, to be honest with you, both on offense and defensively.
And, George, I've got to ask you this question, man. As a national guy, and we've heard a lot of different input about that, but your perspective on Giannis, if he finishes out his career in Milwaukee, just your perspective on Giannis sticking out, staying with the Bucks.
I think everybody has to take that on as their own individual. You know, I don't know Giannis very well. I don't think anybody truly does, per se. He keeps a very tight circle, it seems like. But you know, there is something to be said about finishing your career with one team, right? Right. There's, right. You know, Kobe Bryant is the guy we look at, certainly, in that mold. But remember, Kobe had some moments, much like Giannis, where he questioned where the direction was going of the organization. And I think that's healthy. I think that you have to have that dialogue with your star player. And that means sometimes it can get a little uncomfortable, right? But as long as it works itself out, yeah. You know, Kobe was rewarded for his patience. Now, granted, Kobe also pushed the envelope, and eventually he was able to get a guy in Pau Gasol, but there were some lean years between Shaq being there and Pau Gasol arriving, right? So, yeah, sure. You know, that's going to be something that Giannis is going to have to figure out on his own. I think in this day and age, we are more comfortable with guys leaving their situations and going other places, especially if they've won a championship. I think if they haven't won a championship and haven't delivered a championship, I think that's where the big scrutiny tends to come. When you brought a championship to a city that hadn't had one in 50 years, I think you can feel good about what you did there. And I think the fan base and the organization can feel good about it. But obviously you want to keep a generational talent like that. So for Milwaukee's sake, for the fan base's sake and the franchise's sake, for Giannis' sake too, because I do think the legacy gets enhanced with just one team, I hope it all works out.
Some funny imagery just came to mind, George, when you said that. It seems like every time Giannis holds John Horst's feet to the fire, John Horst becomes a firewalker. He's like crossing the burning coals. Oh, ow, ow. But he gets there, and he gets the job done. How would you rate the job that he has done? You know, it looked like he was pretty hamstrung coming in, but the Bucks found some creativity from somewhere, man, and made things happen.
I think he has done everything you could. He's pretty much exhausted all his options. I don't think there's any doubt. Now, can he pull another rabbit out of his hat? It's going to be tough because, again, there's just not a lot of assets to work with. But when you have a talent like that, you have to push your chips to the center of the table all the time, okay? I covered LeBron James a ton, okay, over the years. Yeah. And I feel like historically, if you look at his teams, they've done that. They have pushed the chips to the center of the table as many times as possible. It's netted him 4 championships. And I think that's what you have to do when you have that kind of generational talent.
And then finally, before we let you go, I mean, you talked about the 6 teams that had a legitimate chance to not so much come out of the East, but be players in the East. Where would you put the Bucks based on their current roster construction and all the moves that have been made?
I would say probably towards the bottom of the 6, if I had to guess. They're kind of in like that 5 to 7 range, in my opinion. I think their floor is a play-in team, a high-level play-in team. And I think that if Giannis and Turner do what they're capable of, I think the East is so up for grabs that they can be solidified at the very least in that 5 or 6 range. So, because, you know, the unfortunate situation with Indiana changes the East in such a big way. You know, the Knicks and Cleveland will be, I think, 1 and 2, barring some sort of catastrophic injury. And then the rest of it, to me, they certainly, to me, has have as high a ceiling as anyone. And then beyond that, you know, what does Boston look like with Jaylen Brown as their leader, right? And Derek White as their two top guys? You know, are they capable of being more than a play-in team? There's just a lot of different teams in there in that mix. And I just don't know where any of those teams will fall particularly. But I feel like the hardest part is what Milwaukee already has, which is having a guy like Giannis, who is an proverbial and year in, year out MVP kind of candidate. Sure. You have that guy, you're in great shape to begin with.
All right, man. We appreciate you, George. Thanks for stopping by here. District, man, we got to get you back on. You got more time, and continued success to you, man. Enjoy watching you. So Bucks have a lot of just good young talent. 12 of the 18 roster guys are 26 or younger. And one of those guys who falls right into that category is, I guess, the newest acquisition, we can call him. He was the number two high school player in the country out of New York City. Dad Greg is a former Milwaukee Buck at the tail end of his career. And Cole Anthony, man, is he's interesting, man. He's you know, North Carolina one and done. He's had some injury issues early on in his career. But, Chris, you know, someone pointed out that his ability to pick up full court on defense is what makes him stand out. Now, you know, I went to your favorite site, Synergy. He's good on spot-up shooting and ISO, really, really good, which kind of surprised me. I never thought of him as an ISO guy, but looked at some video. He can get it done at that end. And then this is the thing that jumps out at me, Chris. I want your take on this too. Doc Rivers has always been a big handoff coach. He loves to hand it off big to small, reverse the ball to the opposite side of the floor. Cole Anthony in handoffs is in the 69th percentile in terms of his efficiency when he gets to basketball. Then he's also excellent as a role man. So that inverted screen between he and Giannis, he's in the 83rd percentile as a role man. So, and that's something that the Bucks have long opted to do with the smaller players screening for Giannis. So, you know, the Bucks have done their homework. This is a guy who looks like, based on his skill set, as limited as it might be, not a devastating outside shooter and smaller at 6'2", 6'3", but man, he does some great things in terms of what this Bucks team already likes to do.
Well, I think Cole Anthony is a good fit for this particular scheme. I don't think Cole Anthony had the luxury of being able to get up on guys and knowing that he had a Giannis and a Miles Turner behind him. So I think that's going to sort of change. You know, it's going to kind of change his approach. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He was not good defensively at all last year when we're looking at Synergy. Orlando's system, their style of play, frenetic, a lot of energy. They're going hard. When the Bucks brought him in, I know that they have something in mind for him. If he can continue to, say, deny the penetration, he's got help behind him, he can chase shooters off screens, he can use some physicality that he plays with, like you were talking about with inverted screens. A guy that has the want or to be serious about his inverted screens, it has the same capability for physicality on the defensive end. My question and concern with Anthony is on switches. I mean, he was bad defensively on switches. And so now it's sort of like, how does the scheme fit his skill set? You know, but defensively, that's where I care about, because if you're going to talk about running Giannis at the one, somebody's got to guard the one on the other end. So it's like, if Giannis is running the one offensively, who's going to be guarding the one defensively? Somebody's got to emerge, but he is a good insurance policy.
Okay,
in the point guard room.
I want to ask you this question, and being the son of an NBA great, you've got some personal experience with that. But so Gary Trent Jr. signs with the Bucks largely on a make good kind of prove myself deal last year because of the relationship with Doc Rivers and the Shaq of the Mac, Gary Trent Sr. I forget what the exact, I think Gary Trent Sr. played with Kevin Garnett, and when they got to the finals in Boston, Gary Trent Jr. was in the locker room, and he and Doc hit it off, and maybe some of Doc's sons were around the same age or whatever it was. I'm not sure how that dynamic worked. Greg Anthony, New York Knick, I'm going to look this up, but I don't know if he and Doc were on the same roster, but I'm sure there was a familiarity with Doc and Greg Anthony. So to me, that's a bonus for the Bucks. You talk about relationships. You get a Gary Trent Jr. to come in on a minimum based on relationship. I think this Cole Anthony signing is based on relationship. I think Greg Anthony may have convinced his son, look, man, Doc is going to take care of you. I think Doc may have convinced them, look, man, we're going to put you in a position to succeed. How much of a difference? Because he seemed to be persona non grata, that's a stretch, but was kind of the odd man out, especially with the emergence of Suggs and who's that Black, the Anthony Black, the other tall, lanky guard that they have, plus some other talent down there. So, I mean, how would that familiarity in terms of comfortable and being comfortable with a guy and having some assurances that he's going to put you in a position to succeed, where does that factor in?
Well, when I watched Cole's signing video done by our Bucks social media team, who do a magnificent job on social, and I just kind of sit there and I'm observing his body language, observing his energy, observing kind of where his head's at. I mean, this dude is absolutely excited. He's grateful. He was thankful for having a pen with his name inscribed on it. And he made that like the big deal of the whole video. Well, he got this pen and he's hyped on this Bucks pen. No, you got to watch the video just so you can see his personality. He showed a lot of personality. All that told me he's comfortable with coming here. He's excited to get to work and he's pretty much bought in already. And to your point, MJ, which is a great point about these relationships that are getting things done, getting guys to sign for veteran minimums and things like that. That's not a normal occurrence in the NBA, especially in today's NBA. Guys are trying to get their bag and get their bag quick. Doc played a big part in that, in my opinion, just like I echo your sentiments about that. But it also speaks to this dude's, you know, he wants to win. And I think that he's going to come in and he's going to do whatever it takes. Look, we're looking at numbers, we're looking at stats, but there's nothing like heart and a guy that wants to be there. And if you're in the right system, you're a cog to the engine. I mean, you know, he could be a huge piece for the Bucks next season.
Well, and just a couple of final points on Cole Anthony. So you talked about, you know, his defensive numbers and kind of wanting. But I looked up how he did, Chris, when he was combined with the two bigs.
Right.
Banchero and Franz Wagner down in Orlando. 612 possessions.
It's not great.
No. Defensively, he was in the 98th percentile. That threesome. That, you know, and again, there's other factors involved. No,
that's a great point.
But the effective field goal percentage, 92nd percentile, turnover percentage, 17. The Bucks could use a guy to help generate some turnover. So he and Miles Turner and Giannis on the floor at the same time, those three, I see some potential there.
I mean, you, that's a genius thing to do. I think you have to look at Cole Anthony's production on the defensive end in situations like that, when he's with two other bigs. And you got to look at him in terms of thinking that Giannis and freaking Miles Turner will be behind him. He's going to have, you know, last year they were 53.8% at the rim, which is fifth best. The Bucks allowed, which is fifth best in the NBA. Orlando was around 24th at 61%. So now he's playing in a situation where the fear of blowbys doesn't really bother you. I think a lot of his big issue also in Orlando was like relocation and finding shooters, guys after the initial drive, and he's got to help and rotate. And I think that Doc's scheme, and I keep saying this because I truly think it's going to make the game easier for Cole Anthony.
Yeah, and to your point about blowbys, I mean, you're almost encouraging a guy like Cole Anthony to press up, and if a guy gets by you, we got Miles back there, we got Giannis back there. So that's a positive. You can make that guy have to get by you and funnel him into your shot blockers, your rim protectors. That helps your defense.
And also what helps you is this switching phenomenon. Wagner, Banchero are not Giannis and doggone Miles Turner. So if Anthony does have to switch onto a big, you have one big able to help, right? So he can come help you, and then the other guy takes the other big. That's a luxury to have. So that's going to create those defensive possessions aren't going to be this big, huge mismatch like they were in Orlando. And the Bucks, 8th in switch frequency last year. So, you know, his isolation burden is going to be greatly reduced. So the reason I'm talking like this, because I read, you know, Twitter, a lot of guys are trashing this dude on the defensive end. So I had to look. I'm like, well, they kind of have a point. But when you look at his numbers just on a standalone and don't provide some sort of nuance or context, it's not fair to Cole Anthony. And you got to do that when you're looking at him in this scheme for the Bucks.
And I just like, it's also, to me, it's like, you know, it's also when you trade for a guy. And right now he's at a point in his career. Now he's been ranked in the top 5, I believe, in bench points and assists over the last 3 years. He's been a productive. I mean, he averaged like almost 10 points a game last year. You know, and you say, well, that's what is that? Well, Taurean Prince averaged about a similar number as a part-time starter. Cole Anthony's minutes, 18 minutes a game last year, were the lowest in his career, and has still put up those kinds of decent numbers offensively, I think bodes well. But let's look at some of these other players in the guard rotation. We've talked about Ryan Rollins. I mean, Kevin Porter Jr., wow. What do you think is the point Giannis experiment? Put your Karnak the Magnificent turban on. That's an old Johnny Carson skit with Ed McMahon. But put your Karnak the Magnificent turban on and give me some predictions about how the duties as the point guard will shake out at the start of the season for this upcoming season.
Let's look at the factors at hand. Ryan Rollins. So he's, you know, for me, it's like, okay, you got a guy that finished the season strong, shot it well, played well, then comes off of that. Do you have a KPJ who had a sort of a playoff breakout, really had a solid 40% from the three, 17 a game? I think he's going to start the season at the one. I think the ball is going to be in his hands. I think that he's a dynamic, experienced guy that gives the Bucks that sort of weapon that you need to keep that pressure. I think Doc and his staff are going to want to keep pressure on people, keep defenses on heels, and I think KPJ is the perfect guy for that. Now,
What does KPJ have to do to get to that next level, to get to that level where he is a better than solid point guard, a guy that you – to me it's mental, but what do you see from him that he needs to improve upon?
Minimizing the lows, minimizing the negative plays, right? Because – you know, he's a guy that could go on a roll of 5 or 6 negative plays in a row. Instead of snapping out of it, you know, he makes a bad pass. The next play, he comes down, makes a good play. He's the kind of guy that, you know, energy attracts, right? So he's like, you know, makes a bad play, makes another bad play. And you got to get him out the game, talk to him, get his head straight. Now, if he can get that side of things under control to where how he manages his lows, I think that he definitely, because he has the talent, dude. That dude has so much doggone game. It does not make sense. And I also think that playing him and Giannis together is going to help him a lot. So Giannis, this was my point before. So KPJ starts at the one so that he can pick up the one defensively. I don't know how that's going to go. But when Giannis is initiating offense, which I do think is going to happen a lot in those lineups to start the games, like KPJ starts at the one, but Giannis has the ball. He's bringing it up, pushing. KPJ has so much potential and value as a catch and shoot three guy. Yeah. I think that puts him in positions to really maximize his game and all, but in not putting too much of the ball handling pressure on him.
So looking at the roster construction, so you know Ryan Rollins, we talked about him a lot, man. We both like him. You talked about him being a potential all defensive team candidate in a year or two, maybe not next year, but in a couple of years with his 6'11" wingspan. But man, there's a couple. He was a two way guy. He was a two-way guy that the Bucks converted, you know, right at the deadline, I believe in January, February, whenever it was, and signing for the rest of the season. Got a couple other guys, two-way guys, man, that are interesting. Jamari Bouye, we talked about him, summer league. He's looked really good, long, versatile, played for Todd Golden at USF before Todd moved on to Florida, won a national championship. But this is a guy I want to get your take on, man. Mark friggin' Sears. I mean, just something about his game, man, watching him at Alabama, the left. I'm not putting him on the same level as Jalen Brunson, but there was, you know, he's an interesting, I know he's smaller, but his chances, Chris, to make an impact in this league, not this year, but at some point in his career. What do you think about Mark Sears?
I think there's no question that Mark Sears is going to be like a serviceable, solid NBA player with the potential to be like a Fred VanVleet and kind of get real good in the right scenario when he has the keys. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to put him up there with Fred VanVleet, but I do see some similarities in their game. I do see some similarities in their pace and how they play. And I can see Mark Sears getting to that level. I love his – the thing that separates Mark Sears from a lot of guys is that pace he plays with. And I mean, he gets you in a trick bag. He knows how to speed you up. He knows how to slow it down. I mean, he's a big-time cojones guy when it comes to knocking down big shots. I don't know if you saw that game. I think it was against Duke. He had 10 threes. I don't know. He had 10 threes against somebody in the NCAA tournament. I was watching. Anytime you hit 10 threes on somebody, you have something different about you. And I think that those skill sets will translate. Like this stuff in the G League and the two-way, it's the perfect situation for that guy because he gets to come up and go down. And I think the Bucks are going to eventually have to take a look at him in a big club. If everything goes right for him, I think, you know, next year, February or something like that, you might see a little bit of Sears in the building.
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah, and so now at the two guard spot, I like where we are right now. Gary Trent Jr. I think has earned the right to be the starter opening day like he was last year until he went into a shooting slump.
Right.
His last seven games, 12 points a game, but he shot 40% from the 3-point line on 6.5 3-point attempts a game, about 42% overall. But we saw what he did in the playoffs and against the Pacers, and especially that closeout game, the big shots he was knocking down. AJ Green is going to be a year more experienced and mature and at ease with himself as an NBA basketball player. Who am I leaving out? Gary Harris. And then you've touched on Gary Harris. Big, strong, physical, Izzo, tough Michigan State. Are you happy with the depth at the two guard spot for this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing about the two guard is the youth, right? You know, you got young legs, you got young guys that are going to be able to guard and run at that position. And that, to me, that's one of the most important positions where you got to be able to match up. You got to be able to keep pace with these dudes. And not only that, so Gary Harris, AJ Green, Gary Trent, but like Taurean Prince, like bringing him back, like, you know, he's great because of his ability to guard wings and forwards. He was what, 43% from the three last year, fourth in the NBA, top five in threes, defense, 79th percentile in spot ups. Like, you know, he's a soup, and I'm not saying he's at the two, but on that wing. And then your boy Chris Livingston. You know, I mean, it's the youth, and then the type of guys they got shooting, they have some decent athleticism, and they got guys that dig their heels in on defense. I mean, I don't know if I'm too high on these moves, but I love the moves that John Horst, I can't believe it. I'm overjoyed. Listen to this. The Bucks completely revamped like this old man roster we would talk about. And I'm not knocking the old guys, Dame, Brooke, and everybody
else.
That was 33 or older. But it's like we knew you just got the sense and the feeling like it's hard to win when you got all these old cats. You need some young legs, some live energy, and they've revamped the roster. Now is Doc. So now Doc has no choice but to, you know, come around and play these guys. And this is what he has because this is his crew. So you can't really, you know, not play. You can't really lean on vets next year. You got to figure out a roster to play like 9-10 guys and keep legs fresh and keep the pressure on.
Well, and to give you just an idea how prevalent that whole dynamic is, I'm getting a haircut at King Cuts Barbershop on 50th and Hampton. My boy Diedrich hooking me up, the lineup king, Diedrich King. But the barbers in that shop were talking about, they couldn't let it go. This one barber in particular was talking about Portland and how they just ran us off the floor with Shaedon Sharpe and Kamari Toumani and all these young legs and the guy that's in Boston now, Anthony Simons. And he had a big shot against us late in that game to win it at home. And Portland was, you know, they played hard. Chauncey Billups has done a terrific job with them. And by the way, Jrue Holiday and Dame Lillard, both in Portland right now in that locker room. So that's serendipity at its finest. Former Bucks traded for one another, wind up in the same place, the same spot. I think Dame actually rented out Drew's house last year. Wanted a bigger place to stay and reached out to Drew. And they played on the Olympic team together. So, but the point was that the young legs right now, you know, you think of the Magic, you think of the Cavs. Think of the Eastern Conference. I mean, the Knicks, you could kind of put them in that category. Not super young, but, I mean, they're an active team. I mean, Anunoby and Brunson and Bridges and the way they get up and down the floor. Josh Hart, kind of their mid-20s kind of guys. But the Bucks right now, Chris, they have transformed. They have transformed from one of the older teams, veteran-laden teams, which you could get away with 5 years ago. But, man, you cannot get away with that in today's NBA. And John Horst and staff, they've done a remarkable job of addressing that, man. Just getting younger with quality youth, not just any old youth, but quality youth.
Very quality youth, and not having to like give up a bunch to really get it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Develop talent, identify talent, and bring guys in. It's been a great offseason for Milwaukee.
Without question. So now, in terms of the small forward spot, I mean, that's one of the things I keep. Kyle Kuzma, four? No.
I do not think Kuz will be at the four. I mean, at the three. At the three next year.
Why not?
I just don't think so. I think there's too many guys there. There's too many minutes there. I just don't see it. I don't see it. It may happen. But at this moment, I don't see it.
But if you're going to start him, don't you have to start him with Miles and Giannis, start him at the three?
Yeah, if you want to try that, I'm sure they'll give that a look. Okay. And I hope that lineup, I hope the best for that lineup. But I do not believe that that lineup is going to be viable.
What are you seeing in terms of where he's going to have some challenges playing, you know, consistently high caliber basketball as a small forward in the league right now?
I mean, he's a better shooter when he's at the four, in my opinion. And last year, it's just different types of shots, and your legs are feeling a little differently. Defensively, you're not exerting the same energy at the four, in my opinion, at the four as you are the type of energy. You have to trail, run, slide, pick up guys, sprint, you know. He's a world-class athlete. So when I say these things, it's like people are like, what do you mean he's not in shape? Nah, but that stuff takes a toll on you. Last year, power four minutes, Kyle Kuzma shot 47.8% from the field as a power forward versus 42.1% as a small forward. So I just see him being able to exploit more mismatches as a forward. I like him as at the forward position. I don't know that big lineup. Do you think Doc will start the season with like a KPJ and whoever at the two, Gary Trent, and then Kuz, Giannis, and Miles Turner? Wow, that's
based on the triumvirate. I mean, and Doc shocked me. In that game, was it game five in Indiana that was a closeout game? I get them confused. But that final game in Indiana, when he started, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter Jr., and A.J. Green, you know, now those three, along with Giannis, I mean, everything's in the 90th percentile across the board, offensively, defensively. They're on-court numbers together. You throw Miles Turner with those three, I would not be surprised to see Doc roll that out. That's your best on paper. That's your best lineup numbers wise.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
So that's what I'm saying. So the way that crew showed us last season to finish the season, how live they were, it's like, why would they start Kuz? You're paying them? No, I think Kuz is the odd man out based on the chemistry that we saw established from last season and the data. The data will show that, you know, those lineups were better for the Bucks. With an analytically driven crew, I mean, they're not going to be rolling with Kuz at the three right now, bro.
My only question, just in terms of, you know, as we know, it's not who starts, who finishes, all that. I guess the challenge for Doc is going to be the sell of telling Kuz, look, you're going to be our energizer guy coming off the bench. I can plug you in at the four. I can do some small ball five lineups, sometimes at the three when absolutely necessary. But you're going to be our guy, the jack of all trades guy that we can plug in different situations and see how he accepts that. But he's working his butt off. Clint Parks, they're working out, doing a great – they got an early start on it this summer in terms of getting back in the gym, getting back in the lab. He understands this is a big year for him. He did not play Kyle Kuzma-like basketball last year, and he wants to shed that memory quickly. So
Yeah. They're going to put him – I think, you know, like I say, at the four, he's in a position to really flourish, right?
Chris Livingston, you touched on him. The Bucks kind of waived him. I think more for some flexibility reasons than not, but re-signed him and gave him actually $100,000 more than he was due to get in the year that they waived him. But then he goes to the summer league in Vegas and drops a dub, averages 20 points a game and looks really, really good, man. 21 years old, just in his third year, one and done out of Kentucky, Akron, Ohio. LeBron and Rich Paul were going to see him when he's 15, 16 years old. And his offense, Chris, just really, really is starting to come around. And and he's starting to look comfortable out there as an NBA player.
Yeah, and these are the type of guys that you got to hit on with this new second apron thing and all this stuff that's going on. Like, you got to hit on these draft picks, these development guys, these two-way guys. You sign what his deal was for about $2 or $3 million, but he could end up ceiling wise be on a Dorian Finney-Smith level.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if we can get – if you can turn Chris Livingston into Dorian Finney-Smith for $2 million or whatever, would you be happy with that? Heck yeah. And he's developed. He's becoming a better shooter like each season. His stats, he's on the glass. He's a ball player. And so, right. You know, I'm excited for him because I just like – you know, you have guys at the end of the bench – that are hungry, that are live. Iron sharpens iron. They're going to push guys in practice. They're going to push guys and go at guys' head. And then he's eventually, I think, going to earn some spots and then earn opportunity to earn Doc's trust.
Well, and I got to give a shout out, too, because I've been watching practices and I'm restricted on how much I can give away.
You give away? Tell us, MJ.
Very little. We'll see. if you can't find us next week,
you know what happens.
You'll know that I gave away a little too much. But no, this will be fine. But I've been really impressed, Chris, with the sons of the NBA players. So you got Doc's son Spencer Rivers doing a lot of skill development with Chris Livingston. But Spencer Rivers, man, is just that whole deal about making contact and playing off of contact and the separation. He has done a tremendous job with Chris Livingston. And then Donovan Ham, the son of Darvin Ham, I talked about him a lot ad nauseum, his work with Ryan Rollins, making 250 jumpers at home after every game. What does that do for a young player, man? Just to have a skill guy that knows what he's doing. How much of it is psychological, the input psychologically to get you feeling good about yourself? You've worked with young players before. What's the psychological aspect?
So it's all about flow state, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Craig Manning.
Dr. Craig Manning. It's all about flow state when you're working with athletes and trying to get them to a place where they feel good, comfortable in who they are, the work they're putting in, and the results they're going to get out the work. And so when you have – and the thing I'll say that I understand as the son of an NBA All-Star, NBA player, in Spencer and Donovan as sons of NBA players, like if you choose to use it and tap into it, right, it gives you this opportunity, this kind of gift to kind of look at the game a certain way, slow things down a certain way, and really focus on the nuances. And so what you're talking about with Spencer, what you're talking about with Donovan, I mean, they probably drill down into the nuances of rhythm, pace, actual like tangible situations and scenarios that are only, you know, duplicated in an NBA game. Like they're presenting that scenario in their training and then guys will respond. And that's sort of how you got to do it. I mean, like skill development is not just rebounding for people and, you know, hey, how many shots you make out of 10? You know, you got to look at every single thing from their feet to their form, the footwork, their hips, and this is one rep, right? So I'm looking, and you see how I am. You got to go over things with a fine tooth comb. And those guys have done a good job. Are the Bucks still undefeated? Were they undefeated in the summer league or something?
No, they lost. They lost early on. They lost. May have lost a couple by now. But to your point, so Charles Lee, former assistant under Mike Budenholzer, now head coach down in Charlotte. I used to love watching him, man, work with Chris Middleton.
Yeah,
because he would, and Chris was so receptive. Charles never played in the NBA, not one lick. Yeah. But Charles was all league in the Patriot League. May have been Patriot League MVP at Bucknell when he played. Yeah. So he was a decent player. But what he had Chris doing, Chris bought into right away. So I asked Charles after that workout, it's like, you know, where do you get this stuff from? The footwork and the different approach to the game. And he told me, Chris, what he does, he looked at guys who had similar styles. So with Chris Middleton, he looked at a lot of Carmelo Anthony footage from back in the day and jab steps and footwork and how to get open and create separation for his shot. Yeah. And so when a coach is putting in that kind of, you know, effort to help you improve as a basketball player, even if you're a three-time All-Star like Chris Middleton, you're receptive to that. So you can imagine what a Ryan Rollins is, with a Chris Livingston, you know, the receptivity. They're trying to establish themselves, young guys, as NBA players. And you got this coach showing you all this love, man, and all this care and concern, man.
That's
God, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Anyway, listen, man, I think we've exhausted all of the topics that we needed to exhaust here as we move forward here in the summertime. Summer league is almost over with, man. I'm just so excited about what the Bucks have done. Final question, Doc Rivers. What's the challenge for Doc Rivers this year, man? Doc's, you know, and how much does his experience in Orlando and with Philly and with the Clippers? I mean, when you look at the totality and the type of personalities and teams he's had to coach, how much does that help him? Will it help him in terms of putting together the proper approach with these guys, this new youth infusion that the Bucks have?
I think it's going to be interesting, but you know, at the end of the day, I think the Bucks have to get to the Eastern Conference Finals at a minimum. Or, you know, it's conversations. It's going to start getting weird around here. You know, this is a team. Look, this is I won't say a make or break type of situation because of just how everything went down and Dame and all that. But, you know, we've had two seasons where we haven't had the results, as John Horst said, that we've wanted. Doc is obviously the guy. Now that he has the roster, I think that's the biggest part.
Yeah,
I don't think he's had the roster the last couple of years, and people can kill me for this. I don't care, but I don't think he's had the roster to really compete seriously in today's NBA. Now with this youth, with a younger Miles Turner, okay, he is going to make that much of a difference, I think, on the defensive end. I think, you know, and George said that he felt like the Bucks were fifth to a seventh. You know, Bucks top four off top. And they're definitely going to be in the mix for the Eastern Conference championship this season. I'm looking at just on the youth alone, in my opinion. Okay, that's right. And then Giannis increasing his usage at the one or whatever. Like, dude, like I don't know, man. I'm high on this squad, and I'm predicting some big things for the Bucks next season.
Well, and the thought just occurred to me. I talked about the teams that Doc had led. I left out a pretty important team, the Boston Celtics. And so now, you know, you look at that team, the makeup of that team, they had incredible depth. And we think of Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and KG.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But Rondo, James Posey, PJ Brown, Tony Allen, Kendrick Perkins. I mean, Doc had a whole – Eddie House, I believe, was on that team or around that time. So Doc had a whole lot of guys – usable, serviceable guys at both ends of the floor. Thibodeau was setting up the defense. I think that's going to be a key.
Greg Buckner's of Cleveland fame, helping orchestrate that. So Greg Buckner's still there. Yeah. But think about this.
Great point. I forgot about Greg. I apologize, Greg. Excuse me. I forgot about GB.
Hey, think about this. Think about this about the depth, right, that you're talking about with the Celtics. Last year, through it all, the Bucks, were number two or – top five in bench points last season. So this season, I hope I'm right on that because I saw it, I looked at it, and that was it. But this season with the youth, and obviously a big part of those bench points last year was guys, KPJ. After the All-Star break, Gary Trent. Right. Right. AJ, you know, obviously those guys contributed, but I think you can still get some similar production this year with these young guys. I'm a believer in this youth movement.
I'm a
believer in this youth movement, and I think that Doc, the staff, and Giannis in particular is going to be able to galvanize the troops and get guys on the same page performing to the best of their freaking ability.
Well, and to that point, and we hadn't mentioned his name yet in this broadcast, but he's going to be, you know, a key returner to Bobby Portis coming back. You know,
please.
Bobby, championship experience, toughness, you know, all that good stuff. Bobby's back, had the suspension last year. So I know Bobby. Bobby's the kind of guy out of Arkansas, Little Rock Hall High School, same school as Sidney Moncrief, our former teammate. But Bobby's got a lot of pride. So this is going to be a year where it's going to be like a makeup year for you guys. Look, I owe you guys an outstanding season based on everything that transpired last year. So Bobby, I mean, his leadership, his skill, what he brings to the table, his shooting, all that stuff. Perfect compliment.
Last thing on Doc. This is the final guaranteed year of his deal, team option for 26-27. Just putting that out there.
And that would mean
I'm just saying, he's going to coach his ass off this year. Doc going to want an extension. Are you kidding me? Doc Rivers? The legend?
Put up the golf clubs in August. Like, yeah. It's time to get back to work.
Hey, it's a free agent year. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I'm just saying, man. Yeah, hey, no, Doc been in this league. He's an OG. He's a legend for a reason. He's a top 10 wins guy for a reason. Like, he knows what time this is, bro. And it's time. It's winning time, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, it's something about making eight figures that
bro, please. We're going to figure it out.
It's something about making eight figures that you want to kind of hold on to for well into your 60s. And
we're going
to
figure it out.
And we're going to figure it out, man. It's going to be fun to watch. Listen, here at District, I'm the captain of this vessel, first mate Chris Johnson, only father and son tandem in the history of college basketball to win a championship at the same school. Here at District, we'll be back at you with the next episode. See what happens, man. More surprises, maybe. Who knows? We're out of here.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.